Welcome to The Afterglow. The Afterglow podcast gives women, we're talking to you, the permission and tools to live life according to your own rules.
Yes, this is a platform to educate and empower women identifying humans through intriguing conversations with courageous Canadian women who are breaking down limiting beliefs and outdated rules. These women have done it, are doing it, or can provide tools for you to do the same.
We are Julie Watson
and Liz Doyle-Hermer.
And we started Afterglow, our yoga studio, after years of staying home to raise kids. Now, as podcasters, we want to help others do the same. Step into your own power. It's time to shake things up and get real about who you are and what you want.
The Afterglow is your next act. It's what came after you did what you were told and instead decided to do what was in your heart. It's how you have reinvented yourself. It's your vision for the next 40 to 50 years. It's when you took your power back.
This episode is sponsored by The Richards Group. Find your home, where you live, dream, and grow. Check them out at www.therichardsgroup.ca.
Welcome to The Afterglow. Before we dive into today's important podcast with Métis singer-songwriter Andrea Menard, we want to mention that this podcast was recorded before the heartbreaking discovery of the mass grave of 215 children at the Kamloops Indian Residential School. While we didn't have knowledge of that event before we sat down for a chat with Andrea, we did cover several related themes: the history of colonization, the continuing impact of that colonization on our planet and psyches today, Andrea's hope for a better and more beautiful world, and how each of us can contribute towards that world and a new vision for equality and humanity. Andrea Menard is an accomplished Métis singer-songwriter, actor, speaker, wellness trainer, retreat host, and the founder of the Sacred Feminine Learning Lodge. As seen in USA Today, Andrea is a top influencer in feminine leadership and was named one of Women Executive Network's Canada's Most Powerful Women. She's an advocate for rematriation and reconciliation and trains women to lead like a goddess. She helps all gendered people to name, reclaim, and embody the qualities of the sacred feminine. She is also the author of the Seeds from the Sacred Feminine Wisdom Cards. One of the stars of the Netflix series Blackstone, Andrea is a 5-time Gemini-nominated actress, a 15-time music award winner, and was named ACTRA National's Woman of the Year for 2021. She's released 4 award-winning albums, a symphony show, 2 television programs, and her TEDx talk called Silent No More has reached over 126,000 views. Her Métis family originates from Saint Laurent, Manitoba, but settled in the Interlakes region of Treaty 2 territory. She carries the name Firewoman in Anishinaabe and Grandmother Wind in Cree. These names deeply inform Andrea's work. We truly hope you will take the time to listen to today's podcast, to not only listen, but to learn. As we release this podcast, it's currently June, National Indigenous History Month, and we hope you will join Julie and I in committing not only this month, but every month, in always striving to do better. To support all of us in that, we will post learning resources and tools in the show notes.
Hey. Yeah.
Hi. I was so excited to hear your voice, because in everything that we listened to, I was just like, even in talking, this woman's voice is incredible. Like,
I love your voice.
Yeah. It's really beautiful and strong.
Good goddesses.
Yes.
We're happy to have you here. Is there anything you need from us to feel comfortable?
No. Thanks for asking. I'm good.
There's so much we want to ask you about. And normally with our guests, we start with childhood. But, we just came across a quote of yours. And given your Indigenous heritage and your history, starting with childhood seems too superficial. And the quote we saw said, "To be powerful, we must first listen and receive the wisdom offered by our ancestors, and only then take action in the world. So, acknowledging your ancestry, what does this quote mean to you, and how do your ancestors inform your action in the world?
That's a great question. I like to say that my ancestors, indigenous people, we believe that the world is a living being and everything around us is our family, is our relative. And that includes the ones who've passed over and the ones and the people that we have come from along the lineages. So for me, it became a personal experience when I actually, I call them my grandmothers. The grandmothers are really bossy, like they're quite bossy. And so for me, I have a personal experience with the ancestors, and the grandmothers are my wisdom keepers. They have wisdom for us. And when we don't include them in our decision making as a person, as an individual, as a nation, or as a world, when we don't include the wisdom that has gone before us, the mistakes that have been made, the higher perspective that our relatives in the spirit realm can see, then we just keep making the same mistakes that we've always done. Mm-hmm. But we have help. We have access to higher wisdom, and some generation, some people, somebody has to take that action to listen. And to me, that's, you know, my whole work these days is all about the rise of the sacred feminine. And to me, that's what that means. I heard that from elders back in 2012. There was an elders gathering in the Turtle Lodge of Saugeen First Nation. And I heard them say that now is the time of the rise of the sacred feminine. And for me, it was like, bells went off in my head, because everything that I had been doing was that. I had been facilitating the rise of the sacred feminine. Now, I'm sorry, I'm taking us elsewhere, but what that means to me is that the systems we live in are very masculine based. They're very structured. They're well structured, which our masculine is very good at. You know, they're well structured. They are competitive. They are hierarchical. They are logical, but they're square. They're boxy, and there's a lot of dark corners in those structures, because many, 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 many parts of life have been left out of those structures, including the nurturing aspect of human beings, including women, including people of color, including indigenous people, including the earth, including trans, queer, two-spirited community, including people with disabilities or extra abilities. The voice of the animals, the voice of emotional expression, all those things have been left out. The voice of nurturing men, they've been left out too. And our world is out of balance because so many things have been left out of those boxy systems. It's the return of the circle. And to me, the circle includes nurturing compassion and includes the wisdom from the ancestors. And the only way we're going to be able to access that wisdom is by going inward, which is also the sacred feminine, which is going into quiet, sacred realms, ceremony, inclusion, all of that stuff, which you know very much about as yoga instructors.
I love everything you're saying. And I love when you're speaking of the feminine, I'm feeling it in my body. Like it really just resonates with me. And I can feel the nurturing and the openness and the flow of it all. Like it's very beautiful. And I don't have to now ask the question, how do you feel about the patriarchy? Because we know, we don't even have to say that word, but clearly, we all know and we believe, and we've learned these lessons over the years, that now things do need to change. And this sacred feminine power that is kind of uprising, especially recently, you know, it's all happening. But I'm curious about when this started for you. Like, did you always honor your sacred ancestors? Did you always feel in touch with your feminine power? Like, when did this kind of like spark for you?
Oh, my. That's very funny. The first thing that came to mind was no. I went into the military when I was 18. Okay. So
that's very male. Say,
very. But okay, I'll back that up though. Is early on in my life, I experienced sexual violence, and someone near me, someone very close to me, was nearly murdered. And it was, I was young enough to be traumatized to think that all men hurt women. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of, if I were to trust that I was being groomed to understand this knowledge today, right now, who I am now, I recognize that I was set up to see the imbalance in the world of masculine power over feminine power and masculine status over the feminine status. I was groomed to see it early. And I was not conscious of it. I wasn't conscious of anything, you know, I was just surviving like most young people. But when it came to me going into the military, I didn't realize at the time that I was going into the heart of patriarchy, the heart of the hierarchical ways of looking at the world, of demonizing everyone at the bottom. And in fact, I was so ignorant of what I was doing that I was there recruiting, helping them recruit indigenous people right after Oka, you know, like I was so not aware of what was going on and how I was being used for the talents I had and whatever. However, when I started realizing that my relationships weren't amazing and I had fear and I had all these different things, I recognized that I had some work to do in this department. And it probably hit me. I mean, it probably hit me in my 30s when the way you do things, like all of my friends, all of my strong women counterparts, my friends, we all approach life in the similar way, which was we were all driven. We were all good at what we did. We all thrived within the masculine structures because we had to, right? We knew how to access that part of ourselves. But one by one, by one, by one, by one, each one of us burnt out in different ways. Mm. I know how many people received brain injuries or had strokes under 40. Under 40, had cancer, had emotion. Mine was an emotional breakdown. Like several nervous breakdowns, car accidents, broken bones, weird diseases, weird pain diseases. Mm-hmm. I'm saying like I collected so many stories that I went, what's going on with us? And all of us were stopped in our tracks. We weren't allowed to move forward the way we had always done it. And it was then that I stopped and started listening to the ancestors, and they were pretty bossy. So it took a while for me to get it. But when I realized what they were trying to say was, you were given those skills to get to the leadership positions that you're in. And now you're not meant to continue in the masculine ways you were doing it. Now it's time to lead as the feminine leaders you were here to do. Because if we want others to change, and our own masculine was so hard to rein in, was so hard to move over and be gentle with our bodies, gentle with our emotions, gentle with our weaknesses, our fragility. If it was hard for me, a woman, imagine what it would be like for the men in those positions. Why would they want to change that? So I recognize what a role that women are playing right now. Mm. So yeah, I wasn't amazing at it, but I got better at it.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you, you know, I've heard you use the term warped masculinity in the past, you know, and that there's a sacred masculinity and a warped masculinity. And you've just kind of given us examples of what warped masculinity can lead to in terms of all the health ailments and mental ailments you listed off. And, you know, I just really want to point out that we've all kind of been bought into that, right? Men and women, as you said, right? And there's side effects for all of us. And so, how were you able to then, you know, the other thing I'm hearing is you're just talking about dismantling systems, which is something that we've heard from Vicky Saunders at CEO, you know, just the whole thing's broken, just tear it down, let's start back up again. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious for you, how did you actually like pull yourself out of this military system or masculine system? And where did you go after that?
I recognized very early that I didn't belong. In fact, that was the place where the actor and singer in me, I was going, let's do a skit
for all of us. At the military?
That's where I, the military, discovered my acting.
That takes courage. That takes courage for sure.
Oh, yeah. I was a hit. I was a hit on base. But it didn't take me long to recognize I don't believe in this. I don't believe in this, you know, so little bit by bit by bit. But honestly, I have to say it was probably the breakdown of the emotional breakdowns where I felt the traumas, I felt the pain in my life for the first time, because you have no idea how they can sit and wait. They can just sit and wait for you. But when I said, I'm going to face it, I'm going to feel it, woohoo! Mm. You know, you think you're going to die, truly. Mm-hmm. You think you will die from these feelings, because fear actually moves into every single cell of your body, and it feels like you, every single cell is in fear, which means you're having a moment of facing death, right? So there's a reason why we don't face it, or grief or rage. And I had a lot of those. And so by saying yes, by agreeing, it's like for 6 months, the first time it happened, the 6 months of my life, that was my full-time job. I just felt every day I would probably have a wailing release or a raging release. And after 6 months, I was a totally different person. I was lighter. The people that I had connected with on a ragey level, or what we shared, our grief or our rage in common, I no longer resonated with them. So when I let some of that go, and now I'm pretty clean. So when something comes, it's like, what happened? I'm off. Mm. What's going on? You know, and it comes pretty quick, right? But I didn't have the buildup of maybe not just this lifetime, but lifetimes, you know, I don't know. And so I think that's when I became a clearer channel to the grandmothers and to my helpers. But that's probably when everything opened up, you know, like I would say that even my career shifted on me. Who am I? Who is this person? But I started to really trust that I was being led where I needed to go, where I was most wanting to be of service. And when you're cleaner, when you're open and you can hear your guidance, then you're led in ways, you know, that may surprise you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk a bit about your career, but I kind of want to stay in this realm for a little bit, because you've said so much just now in sort of what happened to you, what brought you to this point. And so what I'm hearing is that you were working against your own body in terms of staying in this masculine energy, and your body was fighting to be in the feminine, right? And so then you were saying, like, you suffered illness, burnout, mental, breakdown, all because of this, like, not responding to what you are really needing, right? And so I'm wondering about that process that you were just talking about that 6 months of really getting in touch with that fear that you said, like, lives in the cells and stuff. Liz and I talk about this often because she actually introduced me to the polyvagal theory with Stephen Porges, who talks about your vagus nerve. And that is where, like, all your fight or flight freeze kind of ignites from. And to do, you know, certain processes in order to eliminate this, constant triggering of the fight or flight or freeze in your body, there's certain things that you have to do. And I know you've spoken about, certain techniques. You mentioned kind of getting your voice. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, about how you transitioned and physically what you had to do, you know, wailing and getting in touch with nature and all those different things that actually led you to being more of yourself.
Well, I mean, I said this in my TED talk, my TEDx talk, you know, it's sort of the journey, but honestly, it was giving myself permission to make noise. I'm a, you know, I'm a singer, I'm an actor, I'm a speaker. That's what I do. But I recognized, and you know, maybe part of it too, was that I wanted to be, I don't know if it was then, but somewhere along my journey, I wanted to be a better actor too. And I recognized I had these blocks in certain, I would look at some actors and go, how do they do that? And I realized, I don't know how, why is that part frozen? You know, it would be confusing to me and I would numb out and I didn't recognize that I had these, this capacity to numb out. That was a trauma response and I didn't know any of that. Right. So those reactions started, you know, it would happen. I would be, it would just disappear and it'd be so far. It's like my spirit took a dive over here and I didn't recognize any of that happened. So when I gave myself permission to feel and wail, so when I cry, it is a wailing from my belly and my lungs. I can feel asthmatic sometimes when I have grief in my lungs. So I know that I need to cry. So that is a cue for me. So, you know, it's sort of organic. I don't know. It wasn't until later that I started developing ways to help others do it. For me, it was getting in nature, being around my relatives who loved me. The relatives, you know, Mother Earth loves me, loves you. And when you're scared and when you're traumatized and you don't feel like anyone could possibly love you, Mother Earth is always there. She never, ever lets you go. And that was a safe place for me, you know. So I would go out and I was lucky. I lived in Saskatchewan that had big open spaces where I could walk along the river and be alone and I could cry and I could wail or I could scream. And, you know, my dogs brought me out there, right? So that was my way. But then I lived alone and I lived in a house that I could do that with. But for those who don't, you have a car maybe. And then I started developing ways to help, ways to do it. And there's certain sounds that we can make that actually can trigger us into those feelings. Like, you know, if you think of when you cry, that really solid grieving cry, there's a tone that you make, right? There's that sound that everyone recognizes, like, oh yeah, that one, the sound of grief. And if you were to make that sound, it's like your cells go, oh, and you trick yourself into feeling it. So there's ways to release those trapped things and rage. We can make raging sounds or growling sounds and they can start to trigger, you know, because they land in the body, as you know, they all kind of sit in different places. So if we can move those, I mean, you and yoga know, especially if you can move those or massage them. But for me, it all started organically. I just went with what came, you know.
I love that. And I love your TED talk, Silent No More. And I just want to mention it because I think people should check it out. It's definitely worth listening to and watching. It's powerful. And, you know, so, and I love how you're using sound to heal. And as you're saying that, I'm just kind of realizing how we're so prim and proper, right? In our culture, in our society, we're so buttoned up. And, you know, what are the beliefs or just, you know, things we think about how we should behave that keep us from accessing healing modalities like that, whether it's swaying or moving or humming or just, you know, screaming at the top of our lungs or whatever it is. And so what's, you know, what have you noticed in the workshops you lead when you're leading women and you connect them with their voices? What are the shifts that you see happen in others?
Permission is everything. Permission is profoundly important. And, you know, I pretend to be a permission giver, but ultimately I'm putting the permission, the participants are putting the permission in their own hands. And when we feel safe to do that, like, am I allowed to make noise, you know? But I like to remember that we all have these ancestral lines and so much trauma lives in them. But we all come from tribal people. At some point in our history, we come from tribal people. We are of the earth. Every single nation comes from the earth. And whether colonization happened early, because every single nation has been colonized on this planet, It's just the earlier it gets. And but somewhere along that lineage, that tribal earth-based knowledge, that permission to be your authentic self is intact. So, you know, drums and rattles and pounding the earth and pounding your chest, you know, all of those are making sounds. All of those are tribal ways of, you know, because I'm very connected with that in my community, right? And this is not indigenous, my Turtle Island indigenous knowledge, which it is, but it's also other people's. It's every nation. Discover in your lineage what that is. You have a right to be here on the planet. You have a right to make noise on this planet. You have a right to connect with your relatives that are living with you, you know? And that permission is profoundly important for not just women, but for all people.
Yeah, I do feel like, particularly for women, you know, when you talked about that anger essence of, and like growling and stuff like that, like, you know, we're really taught out of being angry. We're not allowed to be angry. So I love that you are offering this permission to people, particularly women, to be able to like express themselves in that way. One thing that you mentioned was the colonization and, you know, your native people. And, you know, it makes me think about like when I was in high school and I was learning about, you know, Canadian history, like it ended with the colonization. We never then learned about the Indigenous people. We never learned about, you know, what the land that was taken, and then residential schools were never even brought up until I was an adult. Like it really is something now that is like I'm awestruck at how the colonizers managed to, you know, keep all of this hidden from all of us. And so I'm curious about for you what it was like, you know, your Métis growing up as a Métis girl in the 70s, you know, 80s, 90s, like, you know, racism is not exclusive to the US, as a lot of people kind of keep pointing the finger over there. We have this big, huge culture of racism, particularly with the Indigenous people. And so what was it like for you growing up as a Métis girl?
Well, the history of Métis people in this country is one of erasure, you know? We have a history of being ignored over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, I think there's something like 86 petitions were before the resistance in 1885. Like there were something like 80, so many petitions were sent to the government of Canada to be recognized, to be heard in a legitimate, you know, way. And we were ignored. So people don't recognize that part. So, you know, that ignoring, that erasure, that not being heard is something that has been carried through the lineages. And so many of our grandmothers, and my mamère in particular, you know, in fact, well, my mamère in particular, she married a French man, you know, and in a way her Michif language and her way of speaking, although what she was embarrassed about it, she tried hard to be better than her nation, right? So there's a legacy of trying to be white, and that's existing in a lot of different communities and different families, and our aunties all say, don't judge them, my girl, don't judge them, my girl. So for me, you know, I'm a light-skinned Métis, so I never had to deal with physical, you know, visible racism. I just had it within my family, and I heard the two different aspects of racism. This side of the family would say this side of the family would say this. So I internalized all of that. Even if the world didn't necessarily see me that way, I walked out in the world with all of that, carrying all of that, and it shaped so many things of who I am. So I recognized early that I carry the wounds of the colonizers, and I carry the rage in the, you know, it's like I say to people in reconciliation, it's the guilt and shame of the colonizing, which can be really annoying to Indigenous people, and the rage and blame of Indigenous people, which annoys the colonizing, you know, or the settler people. So all of it is needed in the circle, but I have both of those inside of me. And I have, for me, because being healed, being healthy is a big part of my journey. Yeah, I'm an actor, I'm a singer, and all those things, right? Speaker, but ultimately I'm here to be the healthiest, most clean person, a better source of healing for the planet. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying, is that one person at a time getting healthy can create change of the whole. So I care about that deeply. So when I recognize that the battle outside is within me, then I'm working here to change it, because I know that that's where it actually ends. That's where it ends. It ends with me. And when I change, then others around me change, and the vibration of that racist conflict ends. It ends.
The one is in, believe that. That's beautiful. The one is in the whole, and the whole is in the one. And I relate to what you're saying. I'm mixed race as well. My mom's Black, my dad's white. And so I feel that as well, the oppressor and the oppressed, both of them inside. And you spoke about your work and about bringing healing to others. And I have to say that you embody that, right? Your presence is quite nurturing and loving. I feel held and supported just being with you. And, you know, I heard in a recent podcast you saying how your music is not, you know, you just mentioned how music is not about you dumping your woes onto people, but about lifting them up, or how that's been a change for you. So could you elaborate on that? Is that accurate? Did I represent that accurately?
You did. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. In the beginning I was just doing what, you know, but I've never been one, maybe it's because I don't play an instrument, you know, but I've always been one that songs came from an intention that I had set out, but I didn't even really know. So songs came when I had my one woman show. That was the first songs I'd ever written. Those were the first songs I'd ever written, but it ended up being a one woman show that had a life. And then my next album. But when it came to my fourth album, Lift, I had a revelation. I'd had several breakdowns, emotional breakdowns, but this one was a real opening of the heart, like a real, whew, you know, there was cleaning up of, so I could walk in a different way. But then there was a real awakening in one of my, I think the third breakdown, whatever, getting confusing. And this one, I became so sensitive to my environment that it's like I could trace music, the origins of a song, right to the creator, the creative person who created that song. And if it was in any way of revenge or lust or blame or greed or victimhood, I just couldn't hear any music that originated from that vibration, I guess you could say. And I was like, oh, I was running from music, running away. I was, please shut that off. Oh, I couldn't walk in a mall because it'd be anywhere. And I realized I had a revelation during that time that was like, and I think I heard a partial story from an elder, and it was about that all of us have a song of life. And the elk has a song of life. And that was all I heard. And I went, what is the human song of life? What is the human song of life? Are we singing it? What are we singing? We're singing like victim songs. Ugh, is that what we're singing? Gross. You know? And so I had a revelation that as a songwriter, as someone who has that gift and has been given that gift, that I have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to lift up the people. And I didn't want to create victim songs anymore. I wanted to create songs that uplifted people, educated people, but uplifted them always, that there was always a way upwards, hope. I wanted it to come from a strong place. So I'm always going to be a songwriter. My intention has definitely changed. It's definitely changed. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, beautifully.
Yeah. You're so multi-talented. Like, you know, we're talking about the sacred feminine, mm-hmm. but you are a singer, you are a writer, you are an actress, you know, you are this coach, teacher, like you've got so many talents. And I heard in one podcast that you would sing around the house and in kitchen parties with your parents. And, you know, your dad was like the star of the kitchen party and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, obviously you were singing with them and there were harmonizing and that kind of thing. So is that where you first started to find your, you know, understand that you were a creative or that you were an artist? Like, where did you start to figure out, what was the journey to starting to sing and act and then, you know, write your one woman show? Like, take us on that little journey.
Well, weirdly enough, gosh, I'm talking about this twice in one interview. I never talk about it. I discovered I was a creative in the military, because it was the first time, because I didn't realize that in school I had lots of outlets for my creative spirit, but I didn't know that until there was none. There was zero creative outlet. And, you know, there I wasn't writing an essay that allowed me to do this or whatever. I just was doing nothing. And I was starving. It was the first time, I think it was 18 or 19, and I had my first existential crisis. I went, I'm going to die. If I'm here forever, I will die. But I didn't recognize, or I started to recognize that that's because I wasn't creating. And then bless my little bush heart, I went, what's the most creative thing I could think of? And the only thing I could think of was teaching drama. Because that's all I'd experienced, you know. My dad was a guitarist, the king of the kitchen party, but he didn't do it for a living because he didn't know he was allowed to. Mm-hmm. And my mom harmonized. I heard beautiful voices, but they didn't do that for a living. That's just something you did. So that wasn't in my wheelhouse until, you know, when I went to, I got into education, was in the drama department, and I started meeting all these people. Like, who are you people? And BFA, I'd never even heard of that. And then I started a band at the same time. So right from the start, I was a singer and an actor at the same time. Mm. And I'm so grateful it happened that way, because as a singer, I recognize that is my God voice, but I'm also deeply, deeply committed and interested and curious about human nature of why we do things. Mm. So acting allows me to ask those questions, and singing allows me to express the grandmothers through me. Mm. So when I recognized that I was two, the actor and the singer, it wasn't until I started writing that I went, oh, I'm a writer too. I must be three things. But I'm Indigenous. Took me a bit to recognize that I'm four things. I'm a medicine wheel, right? I'm all four. And actor, singer, writer, messenger, I guess is sort of the word you could put there, as speaker or teacher. That's all the messenger part of me. And when all four of those parts are being used, I'm at my best. And so what I like to say is that, you know, if you would have told me that I would be teaching or creating courses, I would have went, what? You know, even 10 years ago. But, you know, all of my life, when that segment of the medicine wheel, the actor was active, it's like the other parts got quiet. So I'm used to that. And then the singer, it's like, I was an actor? Can't even remember. You know, or the writer, I'm like, ugh, forget it. You know, they just get really quiet when I'm just in one or the other. And what I didn't realize, though, was the last 5 years of my life, the writer and the messenger were growing. They were the least developed in my medicine wheel. And I went, oh. And it wasn't until certain things started finishing or closing that I realized, oh my gosh, I was just in one of those. Because I didn't act or sing very much during these past 5 years. And I'm going, have I quit? Am I done? I just didn't realize that these two quadrants were developing. And now it's like all four again are going. I went, okay. See, I never know. It's like I follow what is next. What is the next contribution I can offer, I guess.
That's very feminine. That's very feminine energy, going with the flow of that.
Yeah.
I
find it sometimes. I'm like, really? Can I please get a gig? Anyone? Really? Yeah.
I'm curious, what are the creative projects you're focused on now? We know Blackstone is on Netflix. You just won an ACTRA for National Woman of the Year for 2021, which is amazing. What creative projects are you working on now?
Well, I didn't know if I would ever do another album again in these weird different times, but I've been inspired to create a Mitch of Language album that will have me visiting different elders all across the Métis homeland and visiting the different people who speak different dialects in all, because we have the Mitch of Languages. I call it a traveling language because of we were so vast and varied, and these relatives were more Anishinaabe, these were more Cree, these were more French, right? So we travel. And so I wanted to, our elders are worried and sad that the language is dying and that the young people aren't singing or speaking the language. Mm. So all of a sudden I just went, well, I'm one of the Michif songkeepers, you know, mm-hmm. I'm one of the people who has the ability within our community to offer that. So I just went, I guess that's what I'm doing next. So mm-hmm. I'm working on that project. My seeds from the Sacred Feminine cards. I finished an Indiegogo campaign and we are in talks with a publisher, which is wonderful news. So, you know, that's birthing. I feel like there's so many things. I'm training Indigenous women in my Matriarchs in Training course. What else?
You're busy.
I'm working on some plays. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot going on. Things. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything kind of coming out of you.
I'm part of a book on Indigenous women coming together, writing about aunties.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Well, I definitely want to get a hold of those Sacred Matriarch cards, Sacred Feminine cards, as well as that book would be very cool. Do you think that, you know, because this last year has been really difficult for a lot of people, but it's really also shone a light on, as we spoke about, you know, racism, and particularly with the Black Lives Matter movement, there's a much more awareness around it. And for Canada, you know, that is BLM as well as, you know, all people of color, but Indigenous. And do you feel like in this past year that your voice has risen in support, like risen in being heard to a larger degree, like there's more support for Indigenous people, whether it's, you know, getting an offer for a book or being able to be supported in a group that you want to run? Do you think that there has been sort of a rise in that?
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. The people who have been awakened by Black Lives Matter and by the horrific event of George Floyd that made it very public, because we've had horrific deaths of Indigenous people in Canada that didn't awaken people the same way. And there's in the Black community, there's been horrific deaths that didn't awaken people in the same way. So mm-hmm. it's time, you know, this COVID isolation, this time of the feminine, which allowed people to sit, if they did, you know, they were given the opportunity, whether they did or not, but to actually go, am I happy? You know, the people asking those questions. And that is a very ripe soil to create new ways of thinking and to be mm-hmm. open to change, because change is upon you, right? So you're already fertile for change. So Black Lives Matter becoming a global phenomenon is so important. But again, because it's focused on the South, people are still shocked and have no idea about the Indigenous invisibility. And that's the whole fight, is that Indigenous people are invisible in their own land, in the US especially. But we're invisible in our own land. And so there are still a great majority of people who don't see us and don't care to see us. Mm-hmm. And there is also the ones who have awakened, the ones who have were already on a path of compassion and the rising of the sacred feminine, right? Once they're realizing they're walking into the circle, they're seeing all the other ones walking into the circle with them. So those people have been profoundly important in reaching a hand out to and creating space in spaces that were not necessarily open to Indigenous people. And CEO community, which is, you know, connects us, is one of them. You know, and it's also invited certain Indigenous people to come together and be supported. We support each other and we're being supported by sisters. So there's the Indigenous Women's Entrepreneurs Lift Collective. And then there's also, I'm seeing it within film and television. There was a huge list of Indigenous actors, writers, directors, feature films, documentaries, makeup and hair, music. There was recognition in our Canadian Screen Awards, which was huge. And we're saying like an extremely large number of people instead of one. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later or 3 years later, one, two, mm-hmm. right? So there is an opening and we're taking it. We're taking that opening.
I love that. Take it, please do. And I also want to know, how can people like Julie and I and our listeners, you know, be a better support? And so, you know, what you were saying about having breakdowns, Julie and I, we've had a lot of breakdowns and luckily we seem to alternate. I'll have one and she has one. So we're not both breaking down at the same time. And I think we've done a requisite amount of inner work in order to be able to contribute meaningfully to outer change. And that's actually part of the yoga path. The yoga path is about, if you see harm happening, you need to engage and stop the harm. And so we think about that a lot. We want to engage and stop the harm. So from an Indigenous point of view in Canada, how can we help? What can we do to make things better?
Thank you for that question. Well, this alone in, you know, you creating space for Indigenous voices in your platforms, right? You know, thank you. And I know reaching your hand out to your sister is a big deal. So that's important. Supporting Indigenous products, businesses. And as for us, right back at you, Liz, is when we see harm, stand by that person, have a voice, raise a voice, share the knowledge that you see, share the injustice that you see, watch Indigenous films, seek them out, books, seek out podcasts, seek out scholars, learn, because all of that information, all, you know, because many Canadians and others throughout the world feel that they need to be an expert in Indigenous, so they're terrified to speak, that you, as though you need to be an expert in Indigenous ways. No, we are the experts of our ways. We're the experts. You don't have to be the expert. You can be the learner for once, instead of the expert, instead of the savior that is, you know, coming to save the day, right? It's like, save yourself. Your lineage of trauma is probably worse than Indigenous peoples. And that's the problem, is that what you're not looking at is being perpetuated. So the guilt and shame in your lineages, the trauma that have not been looked at in your own lineages, is stopping you from seeing it in others, from caring. Because if you care, it's going to open up in you all the stuff that you haven't looked at. So to me, that invitation to do your own healing work is the best offer you can do. Yes, support us. Yes, give us space to take up space, give us a platform and support what we're bringing to the world, but do your work. do your inner work that no one can do for you and that maybe your parents didn't do or your grandparents do, because it's tough work. As you know, on the yogic path, you know that. And I want to honor you and thank you for doing that work, because the tears and the trauma is pretty intense. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to go, I have a role in this. I mean, I'm Indigenous and I'm light skin. I have privilege that my relatives do not. And that part of me has to be healed too. And I've done it. I've been doing it. I continue to do it. Mm-hmm. So do the work. Do that hard.
That is so important. And, you know, I want to honor you for being so open about your mental health, your, you know, breakdowns, you call it, because this happens. Like, these things happen. And I think that we avoid these mental breakdowns and we get ourselves stuck in these further worse patterns because there's such a stigma around it. So thank you for really being honest and open and sharing about how not only have you gone through it, but you've gone through it multiple times. And you just said you're still doing the work. This work is continuous. It's a lifetime of work. So thank you so much. I wanted to borrow from a question from a Brené Brown podcast that I was listening to. She was interviewing Melinda Gates, and she asked Melinda Gates, so we're going to ask you, tell us about the world that we live in right now related to the feminine, and then tell us about the world that you would like to see.
Even though the world around us looks like crap, it looks like we're in terrible, terrible crisis. I see that as when I'm in my breakdown, I'm birthing something new. I cannot help but see what I've been given to see, which is that we are in a cycle of rising up. We are in a beautiful breaking down so that we may walk forward in a clean way. So the unraveling, and I don't even like to say, it's just an unraveling of systems, an unraveling of trauma, an unraveling of mess, unraveling of habits, unraveling of thoughts, unraveling of wounds, right? When we unravel, that's such a gentle way to put it. I see us unraveling what's no longer serving us. Families, you know, individuals, families, nations, communities, countries, world, right? We're unraveling and it looks terrible. It causes so much fear, but ultimately there's so many people doing the work. So I see this world, but what I see, what we're building is pretty incredible. I see a world of balance. I see a world where we honor each other and our diversity as the gift. I see a world where we're all welcome at the circle, and that every part of humanity and all beings, all things are welcome in the circle and honored as they are. I see a world where the earth is beloved so deeply, and we wouldn't imagine raping her or taking things without asking, and violence against women is ended because we've learned to honor the earth, which means we've learned to honor women and girls and those who carry the multiple spirits within them. I see a world that is gentler. I see a world that has systems that have matured, that are inclusive, that allow us individual, authentic expression. I see a world where people are healthier and healed inside and listen to their intuition and listen to their inner knowing more and listen to their ancestors more, because that's just how they were trained. I see a world that works for everyone because we're meant to thrive here. We are children of the earth and children of the stars, but we belong here, and all people belong here. But the ones that believe they want to rule or harm others, or that those people will start to evolve. Those people will come out of their massive terror that feels they have to rule everything and everyone. And when that fear starts to evolve, then everyone is safer. Everyone starts to rise up, and that circle truly is not everyone's the same, because mm-hmm. everyone's position on the medicine wheel is valid and different, and we wouldn't have an amazing, beautiful world without it. It just won't be as violent. It just won't be as hard and harsh for so many on this planet.
That's beautiful. That's the vision I hope for too, as a mother with four children, right? That's the world I want for them. So thank you for that. There's a question we ask at this point in our podcast. You might have just answered it, but I'll ask you anyways. And the question is, what is your afterglow? And I think for you, the way I might word it is, I know you've done a lot to overcome your own voicelessness. And what might be ahead that would challenge you to speak up even more going forward? You know, I'm curious, what are your grandmothers bossing you towards next?
It's to empower women. It's so the teacher in me, which I said, I'm a teacher, I guess I am, is caring deeply about, because Indigenous women feel so disposable. We've been taught to believe that we are disposable in this world, and that our sacredness has been hidden from us in under all that training. And so Indigenous women, it matters to me greatly, but to all women mm-hmm. and to those who identify as women, is that feminine, open-hearted way of being is where that is my afterglow. Is like, because I did not know my sacredness, because I deal with low self-esteem, because I wrestle with my worthiness and my sacredness, I don't want anyone else to. Mm-hmm. I want others to know their worth and their sacredness and their beauty. And so my afterglow is when I see women light up, or a two-spirit person who's like light up knowing their worth, and then I go see them create change in their world. That's pretty phenomenal. And then I'm also recognizing that if a song can do that, my Silent No More, or if a song can do it, or a character I play in a TV series does it, I'm of service. So, you know, I will continue to be that point of empowerment wherever I'm needed. I hope that answers.
Well, we want you to continue to do all of the things that you are doing, because you are making a difference on this world. And I want to thank you so much for your courage through your whole life. You've just had this sort of element of courage continuously, but your courage and your vulnerability here today in sharing your story with us. And, you know, I feel like I've taken so much from this as well, and am empowered, particularly by the idea of going and doing my own work and then taking that out, healing myself in order to heal the world. And that's essentially what we all want we should be doing. So thank you so much for sharing with us today, Andrea.
I am so honored to be here with these two open-hearted women. You create such a safe and sacred space, and what you're doing is so important. And so the fact that my words could flow so easily is because of the container you've held. So thank you for the work you've been doing. Thank you for creating this podcast for all those to hear. I'm so honored to be here. Miigwech.
That's a wrap for this episode of The Afterglow. Yet another courageous Canadian sharing her vision.
Do us a favor and lift a sister up by sharing this podcast with others who want to find their afterglow. And let us know, what do you want to hear about? Who do you want to hear from? And what is your afterglow? Slide on into our DMs at The Afterglow Podcast Official and leave us a message.
Did you love this podcast? Be sure to like and rate us on Spotify and iTunes and wherever you tune in. Until next time.
Thank you so much to the Richards Group for sponsoring this episode for us. We are so indebted to you and grateful for all you've done for our community as well. Not only are you a incredible real estate agency servicing the beaches and other areas in Toronto, but you are always giving back to the community in donations, in charity, in helping out. And so we are grateful for you and really proud to have your name on our podcast. If you're looking for the Richards Group, you can find them at therichardsgroup.ca.